99.3 County FM is your voice, connecting the county. Seniors and technology, embracing the digital world, is our effort to help people of all ages understand current and upcoming technologies. Learn how to capitalize on tech for you and your family. The following is a County FM exclusive original documentary funded by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.
Welcome to this episode of Seniors and Technology. Today, we are embracing the digital world, and we'll be talking about technology through an accessibility lens. When we talk about accessibility in this context, it's about making it inclusive and usable for everyone, regardless of ability. Seniors are often challenged to use technology, not because they can't understand or learn how to use it, but because certain challenges, like vision, hearing, or dexterity impairment, make it hard to use. The number of people affected by disability is rising every year as our population ages. Statistics Canada estimates that by age 65, more than 40% of Canadians will be affected by at least one complaint that could impact their ability to use digital technologies or access online content. But the impact goes well beyond these numbers. Loved ones, caregivers, family, and friends are also affected, as they often need to step in and provide support in these areas. As we age, many of us will experience barriers to hearing, viewing, and using digital devices due to physical limitations. In our episode today, we will learn that many websites, web services, and devices we already own offer accessibility features that are not only free, but are also easy to use. We'll also learn how technology can make life easier at home without breaking the bank. Did you know that government sites are required to comply with the Accessibility Canada Act? The ACA is a federal law that mandates web content, accessibility guidelines, and requirements for digital content, maps, and apps. In Ontario, the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, AODA or AODA, also requires many businesses and organizations to comply with provincial rules. Whether federal or local, there are steep fines for failure to meet these standards. Research and advocacy are ongoing to improve digital accessibility. One of the leaders in this field, Pina Dentino, lives right here in the county. Pina heads up Aquium Global Access, Inc., a consulting firm dedicated to helping organizations achieve accessibility in a way that meets their customers' needs. Among her many credentials, Pina has a master's degree in inclusive design from OCAD University, is an advisor to Employment and Social Development Canada's Disability Inclusion Business Council. She co-chairs the Canada Accessibility Network and is a past recipient of the QE2 Diamond Jubilee Medal. But beyond all this, Pina has lived experience after losing her sight due to complications of glaucoma. Let's hear a bit of her story.
I always say that I did not choose accessibility, but accessibility chose me. And the reason for that is that I was born with acute congenital glaucoma, but I had normal sight till I was 36. And then following an accident that I had, I suddenly lost my sight. And I distinctly remember being in the hospital and meeting someone who said to me, you know, because you've been in a kind of leadership role, it'd be great if once you get settled, you become an advocate, a spokesperson for us. And I thought, no, absolutely not. This is not something that I want to be doing for the rest of my life. I want to just go back to work, and take care of my family. And I did not really, have an interest in becoming an advocate or being involved in accessibility in the way that I am today. But what I found out is that in speaking to some of my colleagues with disabilities, they were stuck in a place. They were stuck in a place where there wasn't a lot of movement when it came to their career, their interests, their advancements. And for that reason, they shared their stories. And they were so afraid to speak up because they were kind of looking at their life as, oh, I'm grateful to have a job. I don't want to mess things up. It's been hard enough for me to get a job. I don't want to risk losing it because I'm going to speak up. And I felt really, really sad. And I felt that, oh my goodness, that is not the situation I want to be in. I really just wanted to continue to be independent. And so that kind of started my journey in accessibility and speaking up for those people who I was working with and trying to educate people. One the lessons about listening and really listening to people and understanding what their needs and fears were, because I felt that people just didn't understand people's needs. They just made a lot of assumptions, and they felt that if we gave employees accommodations, they would be okay for the rest of their work life. And fears, because like I said, on the other side, the employee who was fearful to speak up or ask for a change or even ask for a promotion because they were afraid to lose their jobs. And that kind of led me to moving or changing or shifting career, but in a way that people and businesses understood, because there was certainly, and there is certainly, a gap between how businesses interpret accommodations and needs versus the person itself. In my job, I was responsible for procuring equipment for the company that I was working with. And when I lost my sight, there was an immediate assumption that I could no longer do that same job because it was very, very paper-based. As you know, again, we go back to that assumption. The company made the assumption that I could no longer do that job based on conversations they had with some other advocacy groups, but never spoke to me about it directly. They made that decision on their own. And this is another assumption that people make all the time. Because we have a disability, you can't tell me what I can and cannot do. I will tell you what I can and cannot do.
If we consider the metrics that 27% of Canadians are living with some kind of disability, Pina's story is not unique. And 27%? She thinks the actual number is probably higher, since that statistic only covers the ages between 15 and 64. What does it become when you add in older adults and those who do not identify as being disabled?
Even after losing my sight, it took 10 years before I actually checked the box on any survey that asked whether I had a disability or not. Having to disclose a disability was if I felt that I was, you know, working, I was productive, even though I was having challenges, and therefore I never felt a need to check that box till later in my life, when I kind of got into this business and understood a little bit more about disability and accessibility, in the sense that we have to recognize that with age comes disabilities, comes limitations. We have to understand that what we do when it comes to accessibility benefits more than just people who actually disclose or that are, you know, we can tell that they have a disability. Disability is not just something that is for a segregated group of people who check that box, but it's something that affects every single one of us at some time in our life. For us, as, you know, people who provide services, who work with clients or employees or patrons, again, you know, if we take that lens away about, you know, categorizing and trying to please one person, but rather looking at ways to please and to make sure that we include everyone, it's a bigger win for everybody, right? So I think that that's one of the key elements about accessibility and disability, where we really need to change the dialogue. So it's not just, you know, for that 27%. My husband will remind me when I go to a restaurant with him, you know, we eat two meals, we don't eat one meal. And so when you think about it, that 27% quickly becomes 54% if my husband and I decide not to come to your restaurant because it's not accessible or it doesn't feel welcoming.
Pina and her husband, David Wysocki, moved to the county about 3 years ago. She sees a big difference in how accessibility is approached as a community compared to, say, an organization.
In Prince Edward County, what I'm finding is that people want to do the right thing. They don't have to be convinced about it. They want to do the right thing. They don't have to do it because of AODA or compliance. They want to do it because it's within their fabric. It's part of their fabric. It's part of their everyday to try and make sure that their customers, their clients, their patrons are well taken care of. And I think that's really spectacular.
Of course, physical barriers are not the only challenges for the differently abled. Making sure websites and social media are accessible is critical too. In Pina's estimation, if your business website is not accessible, you're missing out on a huge opportunity. Fortunately, there are free tools businesses can use to scan their websites and get a report on what, if anything, they need to update. But that's just the first step.
Number two, ask someone with a disability to take a look at it and use your website and see where the issues are. If you're starting your website, make sure that it is built with accessibility in mind and make sure that your developer knows what are the accessibility guidelines, such as the, we call it WCAG, which is the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. These are guidelines that people should be following when they're designing a website. And the bonus about making sure that you have someone with a disability look at your website is also not just from an accessibility perspective, but it is also from a usability perspective, because accessibility and usability has to work hand in hand. You know, something can be accessible but not usable, or can be usable and not accessible. And so we have to make sure that the two really, really work hand in hand.
So what are some of the things that matter? Pina boils it down to a few priorities.
And number one, is it keyboard navigational? In other words, can I access your website just using a keyboard? Can I tab through it and make sure that my tabbing goes in logical order of what it should be, right? So that's number one. Number two, make sure that if you have images on your website, make sure that there's an alt text. There's a description to your image. There's a way to do that. Restaurants, for instance, who often will post pictures of their meals, right? So, you know, you can put the alt text, but you can also just put a text below that describes what it is that you're offering in detail. And we're already doing that in menus. I see it already in restaurants. So it's keeping that practice consistently in your website, right? Make sure that your color contrast is good. A lot of people with low vision will have difficulty looking at things if there's not enough contrast. If you're going to put links, make sure that your links work. So check them. Make sure they're live links, they're not broken links. And if you can, think about putting a username to that link. You know how links come up with, you know, a whole bunch of numbers and letters and combination of? If you can, you know, you can actually change that to an easy name, a friendly name, and then the people just click on that and will get to where they need to get to. If you're putting an event together, whether it be a performance, whether it be a festival, a museum tour, whatever it may be, make sure, one, like we said, your website is accessible, but on your website, people can easily request accommodations. People have to know where to find that button or that link to request accommodation. You know, put it in a way that it is visible on your website and not buried on page number 3 of your website, right? But how do they request accommodations? Can they do that by calling? Can they send an email? Maybe they need to do both. You need to have both, because if you don't have, you know, TTY or any way to hear someone who is deaf or has limited hearing, then, you know, they may choose to send an email. But, you know, some people really do prefer to talk to someone. And so if you're going to provide a phone number, also make sure that the person at the end of the line knows what they're talking about when we're talking about accommodations.
But what about technology accessibility at home? Most of us use smartphones, laptops, Google, Siri, or Alexa-enabled features.
Whether you have an Android or an iOS, there are a lot of accessibility features that are already available on your smartphone. Technology like, you know, your Google Home or your Alexa, also another, you know, other great tools that can help, because you can create timers and agendas with using these devices that can help people who have difficulty, you know, for instance, remembering when to take their medications or whatnot, or to move every so often so that they can get some circulation in their bodies.
There are also specialized devices you can purchase at a terrific expense, but prices are coming down as more of these products become mainstream.
I recently purchased a pair of smart glasses or medical smart glasses. And, you know, I use them, for instance, when I want to know what's in my refrigerator, where my milk is or where my yogurt is. I use them to help me out when I'm working on my computer and let me know if my screen reader doesn't speak to me all of a sudden and I'm stuck. I can use my glasses to tell me what's on my screen. So I think it's also really important to really acknowledge there's a lot of innovation that is out there that, you know, is not necessarily expensive, that can really make a difference for those of us who are aging, who may have issues with sight or hearing, and who may, you know, have dexterity issues. When I started working, I would buy a screen reader license. It would cost me $1,500. Today, I can get screen reader at no cost.
Nobody understands challenges better than someone with the lived experience. Pina's company, Equum, is now working with local businesses to launch an initiative to help them become more accessibility focused.
We are starting what we call it an accessibility minded campaign. And we are going around to businesses in the county and talking about accessibility. And businesses who engage in the program will receive an accessibility-minded badge to demonstrate their commitment to accessibility, which they can then promote, you know, when they're doing promotion on maps or promotion on any of their media, to let people know that they, you know, their staff has been trained, they understand disability, and they welcome this, you know, diversity and accessibility in their environment. So I think this is something that we're really proud of, and we're really happy to start doing in the county, and I'm looking forward to see how people will respond.
Pina's daughter, Laura Burgess, also works with Equum. Laura and her husband, Jonathan, have used available technologies to automate their home. They were motivated to do so for their son. Who is on the autism spectrum. They wanted to create a safe environment for him. Many seniors would benefit from these technologies, as they are a simple way to centrally control lighting, heating, door locks, just about any Bluetooth-enabled smart device.
And it's so simplistic that at night I have this little button. It is no bigger than, I think it's 2 inches by 2 inches, square, that you can just double push in the center, automatically arms my home, turns off all my lights, even if we left them on, turns off my TV. If the fireplace is on, turns that off.
We have guardians on our door to ensure that our son stays in our home. Mm-hmm. And it ensures that those are locked and closed. And if they're not, we will get a notification throughout the house telling us which door is unlocked and to go do that before it can fully arm our system.
So there's a lot of benefit to it. Most people will know what a motion sensor is because it's been around for so long. But a new thing is called millimeter wave. A motion sensor looks for that specific shift. A millimeter wave will actually look for breathing. If you're slightly moving, even just like a small twitch, so it knows where you are. And so let's say me and Laura are very tired after a long day and we forget to push that button. As soon as we lay down in bed, that sensor knows that we're there. And if it's not armed, it will actually follow that entire function. That same device allows us to see if someone falls. So it does full fall protection as well. If a fall is detected and I'm not home or Laura's not home, it will automatically message the other person to say, hey, something's going on.
Jonathan and Laura's system is even configured to remind them of medication times.
Jonathan created automations for me that at a certain time every morning, the lights above our stove will change from white to blue to notify me that he needs to take his medication, and I will get an audible notification throughout our home and my cell phone to tell me it's time for his meds. Once I've given them to him, I'm able to go to our dashboard and click one single button to say he's got his meds, and the light turns off or back to the color that it originally was. Another piece to that automation is that it automatically sets a timer for me. I know that he has to get his meds at a certain time throughout the day, so it'll start that timer for me. So when it's time to do so again, I'll get that same audible, I'll get that same visual notification as well to remind me to do so.
Now, not everyone has smart appliances, but the beauty of Jonathan and Laura's system is that they can use simple sensors to make just about every appliance connect. Sensors on their washer and dryer will signal the system to tell them when a cycle is complete. That's just one example. Laura's mom is in Wellington, and it isn't always easy or convenient to help her out when she's having issues with her technology. Not in person, anyway. By virtue of free features on their smartphones and laptops, Laura can remotely log into her mom's systems and help her figure it out.
I even do this for my grandmother, who's almost, you know, she's in her late 80s and she's in Montreal. So I've taught her the basic skill of being able to allow me to connect to her devices. And her and I will spend as long as she needs walking through the steps. And that way I can visually show her what I'm doing. And if she's running into these issues again, she can either try to troubleshoot herself, or if she gets to a point where she can't, she can call me. And then we can do that same thing of me jumping into her devices and, you know, her telling me what the problem is and me walking through what I'm doing to ensure that it's fixed, but also ensure her safety.
So how does one get started with this kind of a setup? How do you choose a system? Do you go with Alexa, Google, Apple? Plus, there's a lot of stigma behind whether these devices are listening to you. Are they safe? Laura and Jonathan both agree on a few things. First, it doesn't have to be done all at once. You can start with one or two pieces and add as you go. And you don't have to buy the costliest equipment to get the features you want. They suggest thinking first about what matters to you and your situation. What would make your day easier?
You know, you can go to a big box store and they're going to offer you a $300-$400 camera with all the bells and whistles. But in true reality, the $27 one that's sitting on the shelf right beside it has all the same features. And in today's day and age, there's so many different options out there, where whether it's Google, you know, Amazon Alexa, whatever it is, and it becomes very complicated. And the system that we decided to move forward with encompasses and brings all of those systems into one. So instead of focusing on buying this light bulb or this door sensor because it works with Google, we could pretty much buy anything that we wanted, bring it into one area, and it would all work cohesively together. And it uses a program which is called Home Assistant. And Home Assistant is the, as of today, actually, the largest backed open sourced program available in the world. If you already have smart home devices in your home and you want to expand and look into a system like Home Assistant, they will work. So you don't need to sit there and go buy brand new devices or this specific item. Everything on the market pretty much works within this system.
So what have we learned today? First, we discussed online accessibility and provided an overview of features that most websites already have to make browsing more comfortable for seniors and people with disabilities. We also learned about home automation and how it can enhance, simplify, and make life safer for seniors and differently abled people without spending a fortune. Equam Global Access Limited is a Prince Edward County-based organization dedicated to supporting businesses in achieving their accessibility goals. To learn more, visit www.equamaccess.com. We'd like to thank our guests, Pina Dentino, Laura Burgess, Jonathan Burgess, for sharing their insights and experiences. Script writing by Astrid Young, music by John Sharkey, production by David Wheatley, and assisted by Gage Broderick, administration Jillian Carson, grant writing Lorraine Wilson. I'm your narrator, Wendy Mesley, and your project coordinator is Craig Mills.
99.3 County FM, your nonprofit community volunteer-driven radio station, is proud to provide a platform for the voices of our community. Thank you to our partners who helped create our documentary Seniors and Technology, Embracing the Digital World, the Prince Edward Learning Center, the County of Prince Edward Public Library, and the Prince Edward County Community Care for Seniors Association, with funding from the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.